Ray. He says, people will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. They'll hand over $20 without even thinking about it, for it is money they have and peace they lack. They'll watch the games, and it'll be as though they've dipped themselves in magic waters. People will come, Ray. This is a crisis moment for Ray. He's tottering. As soon as James Earl Jones gets done with his speech, his brother-in-law, Ray, you've got to sell the farm. They will come, Ray. You've got to sell the farm. You're going to go broke. They will most definitely come. James Earl Jones goes on. The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been God. The world has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But God has marked the time. God represents all that was once good in the lives of people and can be good again. People will come, Ray. They'll most definitely come. Ray said, I'm not selling. That everyone has a good time and is benefited, edified. The purpose of this conference, you take away something from here that you didn't have when you came. And I'm not talking about a headache. I hope that nobody has a headache, do they? George, you have a headache? With a head like that, it would have to ache. I'm sorry, George. Did anybody fly here? Did anybody fly? He's not raising. I think Gerhard, not Gerhard, that's your dad, but Charles Rusch is here from California. And I think you flew from Florida. Don and Tiana Muller, they haven't been here before. We welcome them here. I can't, if I start to recognize everybody, I'm going to forget somebody, I'm going to lose it. I hadn't flown for a long time. We flew last year to Seattle. A guy by the name of Stan Hartman. And remember last summer? I don't remember. I think that was after the conference. But I was nervous. I had not flown in a long time. And this is unusual, but Stan Hartman was reminding me of the sovereignty of God. You know, and he was telling me, now, Jesus said, I am with you always. I said, Stan, you're misquoting that. Jesus did not say that. Jesus said, lo, I am with you always. I ain't going on no airplane. But I did. I did. And that trip was a blessing. I would like to introduce some people here that are, we have a dignitary in our assembly this evening. The president of Stark and Hartman Publishers Incorporated is here tonight in this hall. Kelly Stokey is in the back standing there with my wife Marcia. You know what? She just brought me this thing. Yeah, just give her. She just brought me this. The first time I saw this was tonight. The Independent Publishers Resource Directory. It's a national publication put out by the Publishers Marketing Association. And we are in here. It's page 223, Stark and Hartman Incorporated. Kelly A. Stokey, StarkHartman@prodigy.net. So, you know, that's very exciting. I have it's not a copy of the book, but it's a copy of what the book's going to look like in the back. And also, I have some other literature back there. This will be a one-of-a-kind conference, because they all are. We have speakers here who have the Spirit of God, and they all have something to say. They all have a word of edification. That I can promise you. If you ever watched a movie where at a certain time in your life, God really puts his finger on something and you see it through the movie. All of a sudden you look at this movie and it becomes real to you because it applies to real things in your life. And that's a work of God. And my first talk tonight concerns evangelism, because that's my thrust, to get this word out to where it is not heard. And to me, God recently has used a couple of movies. It may seem a little strange at first that God is using these movies for evangelism, but he's put his finger on something, and I share this with you because I think you'll see it too. I think it'll touch you in your struggles. We all have struggles to take the word, to talk to people about what Christ has done for us. Has anybody seen the movie Aaron Brockovich? Yeah, Julia Roberts. Those of you who haven't, that's okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about it. Julia Roberts won an Oscar for her portrayal of a rough-edged young mother who was just trying to get by, just trying to feed her children. She's a very cut-and-dry kind of person, for one thing, kind of edgy. You know, she has a very strong sense of right and wrong, black and white. But I mean, she's really rough around the edges. But she wears great skirts, okay? But anyway, she ends up working at this law firm, and she meets this older guy, Ed Masry. He runs the law firm, and he represents, I guess, would represent the establishment, okay? Anyway, Aaron Brockovich, Julia Roberts, is looking through some law files one day, and she finds a couple of isolated claims of people that have made a claim against a huge corporation called Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E. Apparently, this huge company and this mega industry had been poisoning the groundwater with something called hexavalent chromium. And it was getting into the groundwater. And of course, the company knew about it, but they didn't take the safeguards to make sure it didn't happen. And there were people in a small community of Hinckley, California. This is based on a true story. In a small town of Hinckley, California, who became sick. And there was just one or two isolated law firms. A strange thing she discovered was that PG&E was attempting to buy the property back from these people. They were trying all of a sudden to purchase this as if they're trying to hide something. And a red flag went up, and she was wondering why PG&E was so anxious to buy these people's land back from them. So she starts to dig. She visits Hinckley. She's a very bold person. She goes out. She talks to people in this community, finds a lot more people who are sick in that area but don't know why they are sick. Most of them don't. She goes to the county water board and starts researching, and she finds documents that state PG&E knew about the poison going into the system. But a big corporation, they don't really care about the results, and they overlooked a lot of key things that would have kept that chromium from reaching the groundwater. They've been doing this for 15 years, Pacific Gas and Electric. Hexavalent chromium was nasty stuff. This is what it caused. It causes respiratory diseases, liver failure, heart failure, bone and organ deterioration, every kind of cancer. Then it gets into your DNA, and you pass it on to your kids. Very nasty stuff. Then they found 600 people. That's at that point in the movie, God pointed his finger. And he said, that hexavalent chromium is the doctrine of eternal torment. The giant corporation that's dumping the poison is the Christian religion. And the doctrine is seeping into the groundwater. It's not falling like rain from the heaven. It's seeping into the groundwater where one woman, when Julia Roberts was at her house, her kids were swimming, and Julia, Aaron's starting to tell her about all the hazards about this. And they're not telling you things. There's a lot more to this than you know. And she yells for her kids, get out of the pool, get out of the pool. It seeps into the groundwater, and it makes you sick while you take a shower. It makes you sick while you swim. It makes you sick while you wash your dishes. It's insidious. It gets into you in secret ways. God said the world is sick from the groundwater. It is sick from something it doesn't even know that it's sick from. It is sick when it drinks. It's sick when it eats. It's sick when it takes a shower, when it goes to bed. The world is in turmoil. The world is in pain. People are afraid. People hate God. People are running away from reality. And it's because this doctrine has seeped into the consciousness of the world. It is a huge organization that distributes this teaching. It's a huge organization, and it doesn't follow the course of the teaching into the home. It can't somehow see the eye. It can't look into the face and see the pain and translate the fact that this pain is caused by our doing. Aaron Brockovich becomes a crusader for the people. The people. She tries to convince her boss, Ed, that they ought to go after this company. Ed says, look, you know, I'm 3 years from retirement. This is a huge corporation. This is going to take tons of money. They could bury us in paperwork for the next 10 years. I've seen people try to do this before. And I've got my condo already set out down in Palm Springs. We're not, you know, going to go after this company. It's too risky. Too crazy. Too much of a long shot. This is a great scene now. Julia Roberts, he goes in his office, slams his door, right? Okay, you guys seen the movie? She knocks on his door. She says, you know, Ed, she's so excited. You know, she just doesn't see the odds. She says, it's kind of like David and what's his name? Ed shakes his head. He says, this is like David and what's his name's whole family. He puts an adjective in front of family, but you get the point. And how often have I thought of it? This applies to all of us, right? David and Goliath. Why is this movie popular? Because anything that is based on the good guy, bad guy scenario is popular. It's popular fare because it gets us, right? Because we've experienced times when we've gone up. And it's even better if it's a David and Goliath. It's even better if the odds are insurmountable, even stupid. It's even better if there are only two people going after Pacific Gas and Electric. That's even better. Because you're just glued to the screen. You're like, these guys are going to go for it, aren't they? You know, you just want them to go for it. And what I really liked about this was Julia Roberts, at one point Aaron Brockovich says, you know, Ed, it's not about the water. It's not about the chromium. It's not about PG&E. It's about the people. And there's a scene that's seared in my mind. She's visiting the home of a family that's sick, and their daughter had cancer. Cancer. And the girl was probably 6 or 7 years old, and she had no hair from the treatment. And she was sitting on the sofa between her parents. And Julia looked her in the eye. That was a defining point in the movie. Their eyes met. And you saw Aaron's eyes tear because she had children of her own. And it was personal for her. It was personal. It was about the people, their lives. I get excited about doctrine, right? I get excited. I've been known to be a holy terror when it comes to things like free will or eternal torment or these doctrines that are so important. I don't care about the doctrines. I don't care about Christianity. I care about the people. I've seen the faces. I've seen the fear, the terror, the despair, because it's in the groundwater. And people don't know why they feel this way. And they need to be told why, because there is an answer. It crystallizes for her in that moment. And she has a way of talking to these people. You know, Ed goes with her one time to talk to the people, and Ed's talking like a lawyer. And Aaron goes, what he means is, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And they say, Aaron, go get them for us. Go get them. You know, God put his finger on that again. That hit me personally. Now, it might be hitting you too, but I'm just talking about my experience. It hit me personally because I've heard that call, go get them, okay? My defining moment, I suppose, was 1995. I mean, I started teaching this word full time in 1993, but in 1995, a good friend of mine died. He was killed on a bicycle. And after I found out at work, and I came home. And on my way home, you know, I was just pounding the steering wheel, just pounding, and the tears were coming. I said, I'm going to deliver people from the fear of death. I hate death. This is about caskets. It's about caskets. It's about death. It's about a doctrine that says death is eternal. It's hard enough to see people die in this world. Now, let's make them die forever. No. Let's make them alive for eternity to suffer. And that was a defining moment. I said, I want to spend my breath, my life, my passion, delivering people from the fear of death. Well, the end of the movie is the law firm wins. They go up against them, you know, and they get the largest payoff. It was the largest, what do you call those lawsuits where a bunch of people do it? Class action suit. It was the largest class action suit in United States history. $300 million. And, you know, Aaron, while she's battling these demons, basically, oh gosh, there was this one scene where they showed the factory in the background. And this man just finds out his wife has cancer. You know, and the film technique was really cool because it was real dark. And this man, you just see him, he's crying and he's throwing a rock towards the factory. But Aaron was, as she was fighting, she has a family. She had a boyfriend at the time, right? And she was always working on this. And he kind of got tired of her passion, right? But he hangs around. And anyway, she takes him with her to go to the home of one of the people who were sick to tell them how much money they got from Pacific Gas and Electric. Something like $5 million. There's just family, don't have much money. And Aaron goes and she takes her boyfriend. And wouldn't it be fun to go tell somebody that? I'd love that. You know, your suit was settled and they awarded you $5 million. That's fun, you know. This job is fun. This job is fun to see people's faces when you tell them that the God you knew as a child, the God you always hoped for, is real. It is the true God. He's bigger than what you've been told. You know, and it's good to see their faces. It's going to be real good to see their faces. Because David Cooper's here, right? Where is he? You sell Coke, right? I tell you what. Last summer, this is the intermission. this is my intermission. You're not going anywhere. I'm gonna take the break that refreshes. Last summer, Marcia and I had a really neat experience. We were asked to sell Coke at the Fireman's Festival in Greenwich, Ohio. And I'm telling you, we were gods of this eon. We were accepted. I've never been so accepted in my life. When you sell, if you sell this product, I mean, you're not persecuted for selling Coke, are you? Are you? Not really? That Coke truck goes by. Coke, I love that stuff. And I'm telling you, it was a real experience. People sought us. They wanted us. We didn't have to tell them how good our product was. You know, it's like Coke. They put down a dollar. We didn't have to explain it to them. Now Coke, you know, I mean, I know you're probably used to Pepsi, but you know, it's a big controversy. No controversy. It was like peace, wasn't it? You remember? I felt more accepted than I ever felt in my life. Selling Coke. I envy you, brother. You sell Coke. That's wonderful. You didn't have to explain it to them. Nobody asked you what your motive was. What's your motive in selling this Coke? Just sell it. It was a fun thing. Who's seen the movie Field of Dreams? Kevin Costner? All right. If you haven't seen it, I'm still going to explain it to you, okay? You know, I've seen that movie 3 times in the last 2 weeks. It's like, you're supposed to be working. I am working. I'm going to explain that this is work now, okay? He's in his cornfield. He's in his cornfield one day, and he hears this voice out of heaven. If you build it, he will come. Remember that? What? Oh, they will come. No, he says he will come. I just saw the movie 3 times. He will come. He will come. Now that's right. At the end, it's different. At the end, it's different. If you build it, he will come. So Kevin Costner, he's out in his field. What's going on? At first, he doesn't know what it means. Now, he's a big baseball fan. So one day, he sees this vision out in his corn. He sees a vision of a baseball diamond, and it's just sitting out there. And there's a lone player out there. I mean, he tells his wife about all this, and she says, you're hearing voices out in the corn? He says, yeah. Did the voice say what it wants? He says, no, it didn't say. Or did the voice tell you what that meant? He said, no. She says, oh, I hate it when that happens. Anyway, he comes to understand by various means, whatever, that he's to tear down his corn and put a baseball diamond in the middle of his cornfield so that a baseball player by the name of Shoeless Joe Jackson, who played in the 1919 World Series, can come back and play baseball. Of course, the guy's been dead since 1951. No problem in this movie anyway, okay? Joe Jackson was one of 8 other members of the 1919 Chicago White Sox who were accused of throwing the World Series anyway, and they were banned from baseball. All right? Keep following me here. They were banned from baseball. So corn is this guy's cash crop. This is his livelihood. You know, and he's so afraid, he says, when he's with his wife, and he says, you know, I'm so afraid I'm becoming like my father. I've never done anything spontaneous or crazy. He says, and the voice came to him again, by the way. If you build it, he will come. He says, I feel like if I don't build this field, my life's going to end. He says, I don't know why, but do you think I'm crazy? She said, yes, I do. But I think that if you really feel you should build this field, you should build this field. So his neighbor thinks he's out there one day tearing his corn down. This is his livelihood, his cash crop, mowing it to the ground, and he builds this great baseball field. Now at this point in the movie is when God pointed his finger, and he said, in this circumstance, this is you. I said, how? And I said, well, duh. I remember in 1993 when we started the Idle Babbler Illustrated, not having any subscribers. And I had not seen this movie yet, but it hit me. If you write it, they will come. But they weren't there at the time. And of course, my cash crop was the post office. And everybody thought I was crazy for tearing. He what? He quit the post office and he's going to write a newsletter. And how many subscribers does he have? None. If you write it, they will come. Well, in the movie, he builds the field and Shoeless Joe Jackson does come to the field. It's really great. If you haven't seen the movie, go rent it when you go home. It's a great movie. Okay, then he hears another voice. Ease his pain. Ease his pain. Yeah, that's the voice he used. That's the one. He meets a disgruntled activist. Okay, oh, I forgot to tell you this. There were eight players that were thrown out of baseball. The other guys came back with Shoeless Joe, and they're all playing on this field, having a great time. Baseball is the common, you're going to see this. Baseball is the common theme through this movie. So anyway, he meets this disgruntled activist, James Earl Jones. Love that guy. He's a great actor. James Earl Jones playing Terrence Mann. He's disenchanted with the world. He's holed up. But he once wrote an article that he had a dream of playing professional baseball. Remember, this movie's called Field of Dreams. So now he's part of this dream. Then they meet an old man who had played pro ball one inning years ago, but he never got to bat. He played on defense, never got to bat in a major league game. It was his dream to bat in a major league game. Anyway, this field represents faith. It was very plain in the movie. The field represents faith. It represented something outwardly illogical, outwardly crazy, outwardly just kind of like Aaron Brockovich. It's the same. There's a thread running through these, namely the improbable. This field then became a place where people could go back to a simpler time, represented by baseball, and the problems of the world fell away. It became a common joy to people. And God said to me, he said, translate baseball to knowing me. Because that voice, build it and they will come, I heard it again, not literally, with this book that I've written. Because I find myself in the same position now that I was in 1993. As you realize, you haven't received an Idle Babbler Illustrated in 2 years. Because I've built something else. And it was the same knowing that there are unnamed people, people we have not met, people we don't know their names yet. I thought that about all you people. I said to Marcia, I said, you know, I know there are people. I said, it's 1993. There are people out there we have not met that we're destined to meet. They're out there. They have names. They have faces. And if we write this, they will come. We will meet them. This is a channel for people to come together who worship the same God to edify them. There are people out there. We don't know them yet. And it happened. You're here. I wouldn't have known any of you people. You've enriched my life. And I hope I've done something for you as well. The same thing is happening right now with this book back there. I know there are thousands more people that are waiting to be delivered. They're waiting to play again, to be happy again, to have hope again. Now, at the end of the movie, this is really great. James Earl Jones gives an inspired speech. I mean, this really hit me. Now, it's getting down to crucial time for Ray. That's the guy's name, Ray. It's critical. He spent all his money building the stupid field. This is weird because his brother-in-law, who's trying to get him to get rid of this stupid field, plant corn. He can't see the games being played. I mean, these guys are coming. They're playing games on this field now by this time. These players are coming. His brother-in-law walks right through the field, can't see the players. Isn't that the way it is? Isn't that the way it is? Who can't see this? Your own family can't see it. Your own family cannot see your passion. They don't understand what you're doing. But somebody 2,000 miles away writes you and says, this is the best news I ever heard. Where do I get more of this? It's perfect. It was a perfect illustration. So he can't see it. Ray, you gotta get rid of this field. You gotta sell the farm or you're gonna go bankrupt. And his little daughter, Ray's little daughter, the faith of children, right? She says there, Daddy, we won't have to sell the field. People will want to come here. They'll pay money, just like buying a ticket. They'll want to see baseball and be happy again like when they were children. So sweet. I can't do it good, but it was so sweet.
You'll think it's really boring, so they'll drive up
That set the stage for old James Earl Jones. That set the stage for him. Rude. I'm not going to even try to do James Earl Jones. People will come, Ray. Ray, he says, people will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. They'll hand over $20 without even thinking about it, for it is money they have and peace they lack. They'll watch the games, and it'll be as though they've dipped themselves in magic waters. People will come, Ray. This is a crisis moment for Ray. He's tottering. As soon as James Earl Jones gets done with his speech, his brother-in-law, Ray, you've got to sell the farm. They will come, Ray. You've got to sell the farm. You're going to go broke. They will most definitely come. James Earl Jones goes on. The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been God. The world has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But God has marked the time. God represents all that was once good in the lives of people and can be good again. People will come, Ray. They'll most definitely come. Ray said, I'm not selling. The last scene of the movie. The camera pans up on the field at night. This field is like shining like this diamond. And the camera pans up. And you see a string of cars for miles. On a country road, miles, miles, miles. Just little lights coming to a baseball diamond in Iowa. A string of cars as far as the eye can see, heading for a little gem of light that's a baseball field in the middle of an Iowa cornfield. And it glows so brilliantly against the darkness of the night. I would just like to make some post-scriptural comments. Is that, well, I just made that up. Post-scriptural. Things I didn't mention yesterday, just one little thing that I wanted to bring up. I talked about the movie Aaron Brockovich and talked about David and Goliath and why that makes such a good story. Because of the underdog. And you know, in this world, the message of the evangel of Christ is an underdog message, isn't it? It is a message that is swimming upstream. And sometimes it's very frustrating to be the one that's trying to get this message into people's consciousness. And it is like David and Goliath. And we know that God has set this whole thing up for His glory. But you really wonder why God makes it so tough, right? He raises up this huge religion, puts His Son's name on it. It's full of doctrines of demons. It's full of falsehoods. It's full of fear. He puts the Christ's name on it, Christianity. It has so much money and power at its disposal. And then He sends little us, He says, now go tell them they're all wrong. Now, go tell them they're all wrong. And if I didn't know that that's the way God always did it, you would panic. You would give up out of sheer frustration. But David and Goliath is God's method all through Scripture. It's a precedent, isn't it? He always is doing the underdog thing with Abraham, with David and Goliath. It's common procedure. And the great thing is, David wins. That's the good thing.
So this is called Flawed by Design, and not gonna lie, it's one of my best songs, so I wanted to show it to you. So here we go. So here we go. Oh shit, I sinned again. Lord, forgive me, I'll confess, I'll repent. Can't live like this, but I need my fix. Can't have my lust, I like it rough. I'll confess, I'll repent. Won't give in no more. Am I kidding? Oh no, oh no. Yeah, flawed by design, I hope you don't mind. In my nature to cross the line, touch that wall when I see that whipping sign. It's who I am, I can't lie. And I am, as I try, but it seems like I just can't get it right. So I fight to enjoy the ride. Just live your life, just if I reconcile. It's all right, I'm
Rockstar.
So human, give a man to see. Once again, once again, once again. I'm so human, give a man to see. Once again, once again, once again. Angel, effort, this is here. Every day I live, receiving punishment. I'm suffering, enduring for it. By the grace of God, how I get by. I'm vivified, trying to live my life, trying to live it right. But I'm flawed by design, I hope you don't mind. In my nature to cross the line, touch that wall. I see that whipping sign, it's who I am. I can't lie, and I am. Those I try, but I won't get it right. Because I'm so human, giving it to sin. Once again, once again, once again. I'm so human, giving it to sin. Once again, once again, once again. I'm so human, giving it to sin. Once again, once again, once again. And again.
Something here. I don't know yet, but
Rockstar.
So human, once again, once again, once again. I'm so human, giving it to sin, once again, once again.
Other shit, but yeah, you get the message. You get the message. You get the message.